سيدنا ومولانا محمد صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
عبد الله ورسوله. Dear brothers and dear sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I want to begin by a type of short introduction. I'm a person who's been working on explaining the meanings of the Holy Quran for many years now. And when you put yourself in that position, you sort of turn a little more observant of the choice of words that are being used. And our Islamic discourse, the choice of words that we usually use, are very poor. And I pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, I'm not here being critical of any particular individual. I'm speaking about the almost 2 billion Muslims in the world who are put in positions, whoever of them are put in positions of expressing this deen. I have, 15 to 20 minutes to speak about one of the most important subjects that Allah Jalla Shanuhu has guided us vis-a-vis them. And I'm speaking about the words in the Quran that are read many times by many of you. And these words are Bani Israel in some segments of the Quran, some ayat in the Quran. In other ayat in the Quran, the word Yahud or Hud occurs. And the narrative, this historical narrative put all together, is about one third of the Quran. So if you happen to be, or you consider yourself, an involved Muslim, and this about one third of the Quran escapes you, then you have some homework to do. And for the organizers of this conference to have allocated around 15 to 20 minutes to try to cover a very sensitive and a very dangerous topic in the Quran, you know the position that I'm in. I would like to begin by saying that we don't know who our enemy is. I'm not trying to be provocative. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just trying to say the truth. We do not know who our enemy is. We use certain words, and sometimes we get a kick out of a propagandistic slogan or something like that. Let me tell you, the military force that has stolen the Holy Land, referred to as Israel, that military force has a population that says, "Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah." They share that portion of our conviction. And so we're looking at something serious here. Someone, some people, a religious community in the world, although they've been taken off in a dangerous direction by Zionism, they say, "Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah." They stop there, they don't say, "Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah," even though some of their rabbis, you can Google this, you can go and see, some of their rabbis say Muhammad was a prophet. So how do you deal with people like that? I don't expect them to come and say, "Look, there's something common here, and there's something we disagree upon. Let's put our minds together and see and identify this area." They won't do it, because they are in a defensive position ideologically, historically, scripturally, logically. They're in a defensive position. But how about you? How about us? What happened to us? You don't know your Islam? I would think that the Islamic centers and the Islamic organizations in this country, with the freedoms that are available, at least so far, we know what's going to happen next year or in the next generation, they should be buzzing with invitations to these types of people that say, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. Why? What's wrong? You can't respond to them? If you can't, there's something wrong with you. There's an occupation in you that you can't liberate another counter human being from his or her own occupation. And let me begin by saying, this is not an easy subject to deal with, as I said, and unfortunately the time that I've been given is somewhat constrictive, so I can't elaborate, but I'm going to bring it to your attention. Of course, we're not scholars here, all of us, but we have, in our Islamic history, and in the fiqh books of Islam, we have a penalty for those who commit adultery when they are married. If a Muslim man or a Muslim woman married, go and have a full sexual affair with their counter sex, then we have a punishment for that. It's called uqubat or hadd ar-rajm. And this is across the board. We're not here trying to be specific about certain schools of thought. We don't have time for that. And anyone who's trying to open up these side issues takes us away from this major and principal issue. Now, this punishment, this what's called hadd, which means the Islamic legal punishment, it's not in the Book of Allah. There's no such ayah. The ayah in the Quran tells us about وَزَانِي وَزَانِيَةُ فَجْرِيُّ كُلَّ وَاحِدٍ مِنْهُمَا مِئَةَ جَلْدًا. This is the punishment we have in the Book of Allah. Now, these fuqaha, they try to explain this by saying, okay, a غير محصن, person who's not married, and commits this act of illicit sexual intercourse, then you whip them or you lash them 100 times. That's what the ayah is saying. But if the individual is married and does the same thing, then their punishment is stoning them to death, a rajm. And we've lived with this for all of these years. And now, there's a practical difficulty with that. And that is, in some areas of the Muslim world where they want to apply Islamic law, there's an unwillingness by the average Muslim to do this. I'm not talking theoretically. This is a practical thing that takes place, that happened and will continue to happen. So where did this come from? This rajm came from the Torah, Israeli punishment for that type of adultery. It didn't come from us. And there's information pertaining to this during the time of Allah's Prophet, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his, in Medina, when two individuals were guilty of this act. And so, the information was relayed to Allah's Prophet. What do we do with these two individuals? And these two individuals turned out to be a Jew and a Jewess. And the question was posed to Allah's Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, because there's an Islamic authority with Islamic penalties, and then there's the wathiqa of al-Medina, an agreement between the Muslims and the Jewish communities in al-Medina, that the Muslims shall give the Jews the right to apply their own scriptural laws to their own Jewish community. So what do we do here? Do we apply Islamic law to them, which is al-jard, or do we apply a Jewish penalty to them, which is in their own book? So he said they should be according to Wathiqat al-Madina, the document of al-Madina, which gave them a degree of autonomy. It should be applied to them, their own punishment. And there was a rajm. What we live with today, we the Muslims, the Jews no longer apply this punishment. Has anyone heard of Jews stoning adulterous and adulterers to death? Has anyone heard of this anywhere in the world? Why do you hear that Muslims are doing this? Because in our history we had this Israeli influence penetrate into our tafsir, into our books of hadith, and into our fiqh area, which we are living with today. This is serious. And when it's brought up, let me speak about the Sunni context here. And we need brave people who come from a Sunni context to be critical to the wrongs in that context. And we need brave people from the Shi'i context to be critical of what is wrong in their fiqhi literature or hadith literature or whatever literature exists. I can't do it otherwise. You can't do it otherwise. So when the Sunnis are presented with this, what do they say? Oh, this is an ayah. This is a ridiculous explanation, an attempt to explain away this problem. They say, oh, this was an ayah in the Quran, and this ayah has been deleted. إِنَّا نَحْنُ نَزَلْنَا الذِّكْرِ وَإِنَّا لَهُ لَحَافِظُونَ. So please tell us what this ayah was. It says, الشيخ والشيخة فارجموهما من الله البتة. They say, this is an ayah. Where did this come from? Well, they dug into these. This is not an ayah, it's not in the Book of Allah. We know the Book of Allah from cover to cover, from Al-Fatiha and Al-Baqarah to Al-Mu'awwidhatayn. They haven't changed one letter, one vowel, one diacritic has not changed. But this is when they try to explain it away. We have a problem that goes with this depth. I'm not trying to go here into some historionics. I'm not trying to get you lost in some type of details that are hundreds or thousands of years old. Because this type of infiltration of our internal Islamic mind, I don't use the word religious, I don't belong to the Judeo-Christian terminology. They've infiltrated inside, deep down, inside of our internal mind. That's where the occupation began. People speak about a materialistic, military, physical occupation of Palestine, which is true, which we have to deal with, which we have to reach eventually. But before we reach there, we have to liberate our internal selves from the Israeli character inside us. Now, the Arabians, way back then, they were suffering from a psychological inferiority complex. Before the advent of Rasulullah alayhi wa alayhi salatu wa salam, the Arabians considered Yahud to be like the scriptural gurus of the world. If you have any question pertaining to revelation, if you have any questions about prophets and scriptures, you go to Yahud and ask them, because these are people of the book. This, unfortunately, this attitude and this inferiority was not finished with the advent of the Prophet and the Quran and Iman and Islam. It lingered on. It lived on into the years after the Prophet. So they sort of looked and considered Jewish scholars to be scholars in their own right, whether they remained Yahud or whether they became Muslims, because some of them became Muslims. That inferiority, it's a religious inferiority complex. That right now is complicated with racism. Right now we have the same religious inferiority complex, and add to it a racist inferiority complex. And this shows when an African American becomes a Muslim, a lot of people look the other way. When a white, an Anglo or a Euro American becomes a Muslim, oh wow! This is an inferiority. You people, I'm not talking about you personally here, I don't know you personally. I'm speaking about the Islamic public psychology and mind that's out there. It is inferior. And especially some of you, or a lot of you, I don't know, I didn't count you, but from the Indian subcontinent, I don't know, there's something in that history maybe has to do with the caste system. Islam never, just like the Arabians were never liberated from their own inferiority, the Indo-Pakistani Muslims were not liberated from their inferiority. So these people, they know us very, we don't know them. Bani Israel knows us very well. And you have to plead for ignorance. That's the first step in the right direction. Why don't you know them? Why don't we know them? Because mentally we're crippled. We walk with a cane when it comes to our thoughts. No one's robust in their mind to take them out. Come! Let's meet. Invite 10 rabbis with this conference. Why doesn't it have rabbis in it? I would like this conference to have an anti-Zionist rabbi and a pro-Zionist rabbi. Let us listen to them. What's wrong? We haven't matured enough. We haven't reached that psychological level of understanding, the wide horizon that takes them on and takes them in. Doesn't exist. So they're like termites. They will penetrate our body and do their work. What do you expect from a termite? And they will begin to eat. They will begin to carve inside of us, which they did. And they found, look, Muslims, their book is a book of peace. The Quran, their prophet, are a material of peace, and they're a material of war. So they took this broad thing, and they said, okay, let's monkey around with this stuff. If they are people of peace, we shall come to them. They go to Hajj, they go to Mecca, they go to Medina. Who's going to tell them no? These types of people can go, it's easy, they can go to an Islamic center and say, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, because they believe Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. So that first part for them is easy. And if it's a second part that justifies for them to go into Mecca and Medina, okay, Ashhadu anna Muhammad al Rasulullah, give me the piece of paper, I'm going to Mecca and Medina. They did this as Orientalists, they did this for hundreds of years, they're still doing it today. But if a Muslim, you and I, if we wanted to go to the Arabian Peninsula as Hujjaj or as Mu'tamiri, we want to go to the Hajj or the Umrah, and let's say, I want to go to Khaybar. Yes, I want to go to Khaybar. The Prophet of Allah went to Khaybar. I want to go to Khaybar. Oh, no, you can't go there. It's off limits. Who said it's off? Where did this come from? Show me an ayah. Show me a hadith. These people, they go by ayat and hadith because they call this is the Dalil. Okay. Turn their own way of thinking, turn it on them. Say, okay, where's the Dalil? Where's the ayah? Where's the hadith? He says, we as Muslims cannot go to Khaybar, or cannot go to Al-Taf, or cannot go to Hunayn, or cannot go to Tabuk, or cannot go to Mu'ata. Wow, who said? Where did this come from? But these questions are not posed. They don't circulate in the Muslim public mind. Because we are, let's face it, it's the truth. The truth hurts. We are inferior. That's our problem. They occupy us militarily because we permitted them to occupy us mentally. See, I have 2 minutes. I haven't even put the key. time. Okay, he's giving me 5 minutes. This is going to become an auction. Is there anyone giving me 4 minutes? I'm sorry. So they come to us, they go, look, this is a religion of peace, this is a religion of war. So they work this to the extreme. They make us so peaceful. What do you think? Al-Babiyya, and Al-Baha'iyya, and Al-Qadiyaniyya, and Al-Ahmadiyya. Where did all this come from? They made us so peaceful, or they tried to move us in that direction to do what? To kill our determination, our willpower. We are so peaceful, we no longer have a willpower. So they kill with Mujahid al-Maytun. وهو ماشي على الثرى يظن من الأحياء وهو عديم. That's how they tried to do it on one end. On the other end they said, oh, these are people, they have ayat in the Quran that speak about war and confrontation and combat duties and all this stuff. Okay, let's take them in that direction too. So they came to us with this Wahhabi stuff, this Salafi stuff, that blew this whole thing also out of proportion on the other end. So they tried to make out of us people who lust for war. Allah says in the Quran, كُتِبَ عَلَيْكُمُ الْقِتَالُ وَهُوَ كُرْهٌ لَكُمْ. They came and they made this كُتِبَ عَلَيْكُمُ الْقِتَالُ وَهُوَ حِبٌّ لَكُمْ. He did this, and where are we? Is anyone aware of this thing that's going on? It's been going on now for centuries. Unfortunately, they don't do these things. We would be divide and conquer. That's their policies. There's been an undisclosed agreement between the great powers in Euro-America, Zion-Euro-America, the great power there, and then the feather-brain powers in the Arabian Peninsula. An unannounced agreement. You divide, meaning you Arabians, you divide, we gave you all this stuff, Wahhabi stuff, you divide the Muslims and we conquer. Mm-hmm. We'll come in with colonialism, with imperialism, with Zionism, we'll take your lands, we'll take your natural resources, and you continue to argue your filthy affairs. And we will even finance you to argue your filthy affairs. Please, do it! We'll give you visas. We'll give you Islamic centers. We'll give you all that is required. Provided you have to argue your Islamic fitri differences to death. And we fell for it. Why did we fall for it? Because we don't think. We don't look at the larger picture. We don't see what is being done to us. There are demonstrations of how they infiltrate, how these Israeli Zionist types, how they infiltrated political parties. Hizb al-Ba'ath al-Arabi al-Ishtirak was infiltrated by them way back in the 1950s. They had a very important spy that made his way all the way up in the Ba'ath party. We can't go into any details of that simply because we don't have time. And nowadays, we have the Saudi Yahudi Alliance. We have Saudi Arabia now, and the Israelis, more behind the scenes, more clandestinely, more privately, working in tandem with each other against what? Against the government in Egypt? No. Against the government in Jordan? No. Against who? What are they? You know, you've been tuned in the past few weeks about this, the nuclear negotiations that have been going on. It's been, what, 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years? Contacts and negotiations? You've heard all of this. And that one Saudi general shows up in Washington, D.C. a couple of months ago. He shares the podium with another Yehudi official who used to be an ambassador of the Israeli illegitimate racist nation state here in America, in the United Nations, or whatever, Dory Gold, and this General Rishki from Saudi Arabia. One of the things they agreed upon, and they said it, was that there should be a sovereign, independent Kurdistan. This is what they disclosed. This is what they said in public, what they said in private, what goes into this, carving up Syria, Turkey, Iraq, and the Islamic Republic, the Israeli intelligence, and military, and paramilitary people have been positioned in Kurdistan for so long. They want to do that, and you can see here how many people have attended this conference and how many people here are listening to this session, what has happened to us. Saudi Arabia is so desperate nowadays that just a few days ago, 100 Indian from India, military officers are in Saudi Arabia. What are Indian military officers doing in Saudi Arabia? Is this the first step to be followed by 100 Israeli Zionist military officers in Saudi Arabia? And if you think that the Wahhabis have a grudge against the Shiites, you should listen to what they say about the Sufis, or you should listen to what they say about the Hanafis. If you can get a hold, there's a book written by Abdullah ibn Ahmed ibn Hanbal. Abdullah, the son of Ahmed ibn Hanbal. He wrote a book called As-Sunnah. Try to obtain that book. And in it, read what he says and what this crowd of people says about Abi Hanifa. Descriptions like he is in the deepest pits of Jahannam. His body rots where it is. Any town or village that has Ahnaf in it is condemned and doomed. And it goes on like that until after reading this, you reach the conclusion that Abu Hanifa was a Kafir. But where? I'd like to say, if we were on the front lines of the breaking events of our day and our time, we'd have that book as soon out here. Make it present for the Muslim public to read what these types of people are saying, not about Shiites, not about Sufis, about a school of thought that they consider, at least in public, to be one of the four legitimate fiqhi Islamic schools of thought. Then you have, and then they twist the words. There's two operative words they have in their vocabulary, pointing their fingers of kufr and shirk at other Muslims. The major word is shirk. They took this word from the political and ideological context and they put it in the ritualistic context. The ayah in the Quran, there's a couple of ayahs that clarify this issue. وَلَا يُشْرِكُ فِي حُكْمِهِ أَحَدًا. Shirk here pertains to hukm. Shirk pertains to rules and laws and decision-making and governance. وَلَا يُشْرِكُ فِي حُكْمِهِ أَحَدًا. وَقُلِ الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ الَّذِي لَمْ يَتَّخِذْ وَلَدًا وَلَمْ يَكُنْ لَهُ شَرِيكٌ فِي الْمُلْكِ. Shirk here has to do with mulk, with dominion, with sovereignty. So how do they take this shirk from that sphere and they place it in issues that have to do with graves and with cemeteries and with masajid and with adriha, mausoleums, and this type? Where did that come from? But just like we don't have the mental gunpowder to blast away their own blasphemy, just like we don't have it to blast away the blasphemy of Bani Israel, We're lacking on all fronts, people. Brothers and sisters, wake up. What is it going to take for us to begin to move in this world at the level of these events, instead of regurgitating more of the same that we hear from year to year, from conference to conference? And I'm being here brotherly and sincerely critical, because time is not, at least in the near future, time, if things go on like this, is not on our side. I know these brothers have been very kind. I know I have exceeded my time. I don't want to feel, and I don't want you to feel, that I'm occupying other people's time. We're speaking about against mental occupation and military occupation. We're also speaking against the occupation of the schedule that you have at hand. I had quite a few other things to say. May Allah forgive me and forgive you. May Allah correct our steps into the future. غفر الله لنا ولكم وصلى الله على محمد وآل محمد سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون وسلام على المرسلين الحمد لله رب العالمين.